welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's yesteryear. Mark Lavonier, your host for this hour of sitcoms. Later on, The Great Gildersleeve from 1945. But first, a broadcast of The Halls of Ivy from May 5th, 1950 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Slitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. And now, The Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's that period of watchful waiting which happens every spring between Easter vacation and final exams. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, spends his days now in careful consideration of possible results of year-end fatigue. His wife, the former Victoria Cromwell of the London stage, is listening now, as he says.
And it's true every year, Vicky. From the moment they come back after the Easter holiday, anything can happen. And 9 out of 10 times does. It's the annual silly season.
Well, I refuse to worry about it, Toddy. Your ability to handle the youthful mind always thrills me.
If it were only the youthful mind. This epidemic of spring strikes almost everyone. Age confers no immunity. Even the faculty begins to organize ukulele clubs. And the Board of Governors are forming themselves into a scouting troop, which they're calling the Ivy Beavers and Bruisers.
Whatever did they do?
Who knows? Beef and bruise, I suppose. The youngest member is 58. Last weekend, they all slept under the stars at Schultz's Grove in Pupton.
It rained on Saturday night.
Cats and dogs.
Were they communing with nature?
Yes, but apparently nature didn't commune back. None of them has been able to get out of bed since. These disciples of Tarzan have learned, I imagine, that aping an ape man is not to be monkeyed with.
I suppose they had to call off their Tuesday meeting.
Yes, each one now is nursing his cold and dreaming up deviltry for me.
Oh, I think you're just imagining things, Toddy. Don't forget it's getting close to the end of the year for you, too. You're tired.
I hope you're right, but until the first day of exams is over, I won't be able to hear a telephone ring without...
Without what?
Without answering it, I guess, with great fear and trembling, and the sincere hope that it's the wrong number. Excuse me. Dr. Hall speaking. Mr. Wellman. Yes, I expect to be, but... No, I'll be here. All right. Goodbye.
Spring is here.
And busting out all over. He's livid.
When isn't he?
Very proper question. He probably means to prove that I personally turned on the rain Saturday night, then bribed all the town doctors to prescribe arsenic in generous doses. Why didn't I think of that?
Why did Mr. Wellman go to such lengths to carry on this great feud with you, Toddy? Does he really dislike us so much?
Well, to be quite fair to our chairman of the board, Vicky, I don't think he could answer that question himself. Mr. Wellman is deeply and sincerely interested in this college and everything that happens here.
Well, so are you. You're also qualified to do the things that need to be done and do them much better than anyone else.
Well, thank you, my darling, but my business, however, is education. Mr. Wellman's is soup.
On him, it looks good. I can close my eyes now and see him peering through the noodles.
Well, as the saying goes, let him wear them in good health. At any rate, in or out of soup, he is devoting his fortune and the rest of his life to Ivy. And for that, if nothing else, he has my qualified admiration.
Wellman is an absolute devil, and you know it. He's out for your hide. And mine, too, for that matter.
Well, Vicky, he can have mine. It's a rather tired, very battered old hide. Scarred by the marks of whip and spur, but yours, that is another matter. And if there is ever any move made in the direction of your lovely epidermis, well, Mr. Wellman will discover why they used to call me Wildcat Hall. The tiger of the tap room. Well, personally...
Well, that's probably soup face now.
Now, be sorry.
Mrs. Hall.
Yes, Alice.
There's a salty-looking character here. A nasty old job. Looks like a top sergeant just busted the corporal.
Did he give you his name?
Well, not till I made him sound off. He just wants to talk to the top brass. Name's Wellman. He ought to be pensioned by now.
Well, ask him to come in, Alice.
Okay, but you're wasting your time, Colonel.
I do wish he'd stop calling me Colonel. Makes me feel like going out and munching some blue grass. Ah, Mr. Wellman.
Dr. Hall.
How do you do, Mr. Wellman?
I'm not doing well at all, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Furthermore, as it is entirely due to your most recent interference in college affairs, I shall come straight to the point.
Just a moment. Not that straight, Mr. Wellman, if you please. This lady is my wife. You will remember that.
I do, Dr. Hall. It is not my desire to be disrespectful, but I am a man of few words. I do not propose to shilly-shally.
Well, would you mind telling me what I've done?
It has come to my attention, Mrs. Hall, that you are using your influence to persuade certain students to take up a career such as yours has been.
Me? Persuading students? What, you mean to go on the stage? Oh, how ridiculous.
I shall have to ask you to be more specific, Mr. Wellman. It has come to your attention. Through whom? And who are certain students?
I am not at liberty to mention names at this moment.
Then you have grossly overstepped your authority to have mentioned this at all. I shall take it up with the board at once.
You will take it up. I will take it up, Doctor, tomorrow at a special session.
You apparently don't question the truth of this accusation at all, do you, Mr. Wellman?
Hardly. The source is beyond reproach.
And I take it that is more than you can say for Mrs. Hall or myself.
I have a high regard for you, Dr. Hall, and Mrs. Hall, professionally. I have never believed, however, that your two professions could be fused. My argument this time has, I think, been proved.
You firmly established, then, that I'm a menace to Ivy.
That, Mrs. Hall, is a rather extreme way of stating it, but I must admit...
Mr. Wellman.
What is it?
You've gone pretty far with me before. I've tried to be fair, to be understanding. May I offer you a word of advice?
Pray do.
You had better be right this time.
Good day, Dr. Hall.
Good day. Pompous, fatuous, self-righteous ass.
Really?
What the devil's he talking about anyway?
And the foggiest idea. Does it worry you, darling?
Oh, how could it worry me? I know how you behave with students. You're wonderful with them, and any influence you ever used has done them good.
Hey, Colonel.
Who, what? Oh, me, yes, it's you. What is it?
Well, I heard that old buzzard screaming in here, so I give his orders a little frisk.
You did what?
I cased his effects and sifted his knapsack.
Alice.
Yes, ma'am.
At ease.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Now, what are you saying? I lifted some papers. Thought we might go through them before taps, get the case broken by reveille, and go into the court-martial with our heads up and tails over the dashboard.
You stole some papers?
Ma'am, in the armed forces, we call it liberating.
But, Alice, this is criminal.
My orders came straight from the upper echelon. Brass Hat called Meriwether, phoned while you were busy.
Meriwether?
Yep. Gave me my orders. Told me just where the papers were. Told me to snatch him. He's phoning you later, so read them, Colonel. Go ahead, read them.
Certainly not.
Well, I will. I'm the prisoner anyway. Look, Toddy.
Victoria, you must not go through Mr. Wellman's private correspondence. Dull, though it probably is.
Why not? He's making a business of going through my private life. Here, this envelope's marked in pencil. Case of Betty Garnett, Victoria Hall. Garnett? My gosh!
That's the first time I ever heard you say my gosh, Victoria. Now, if you can only learn to follow batting averages and chew gum...
Oh!
What's the matter?
I don't have to read Mr. Wellman's mail. I know now.
Well, tell me.
Betty Garnett is the most talented youngster in this school. Theatrically, that is. She was the toast of the junior follies. You know about that. But what you don't know is that I wrote her mother a letter.
Did you? Why?
Because I thought she was wonderful. I sat down and poured out all my enthusiasm about her to the one person who ought to love it, her mother. But I certainly didn't suggest that she had run away from school and join a burlesque company or something.
No, of course you didn't. Writing her mother was a fine thing to do. I'm just trying to think why the name of Garnet rings such a bell with me. Garnet. Anyway, I can't understand why there should be such a fuss about a highly complimentary letter to a parent.
Oh, I can.
What do you mean? That simply because you were an actress and the letter came from you?
Exactly. I'm an actress, or was, so anything from me is sinful and sinister.
Now, can anyone be that narrow in this enlightened age?
If this age is enlightened, Toddy, there's a certain dim bulb named Wellman who...
I'll get it. Dr. Hall speaking.
Doctor Merriweather.
Oh, hello, Mr. Merriweather.
Yeah, I'll make this brief, Doctor. I told that military gargoyle of yours to swipe those papers because I think this whole thing is absurd. Tempest in a crackpot. And you know who I mean.
I do indeed.
Yeah, I wanted you to be prepared, Doctor. Mrs. Garnet will be here tomorrow for the meeting. You know the type. Thin-lipped and thick-headed. He's demanding that Mrs. Hall be forbidden further contact with the students.
What? Forbid my wife to...
That's what her letter said. Being as how she contributed more than $250,000 to the school in the last 2 years, the governors think she's a highly cultured lady.
What do you think?
I think she's an eagle-beaked ghoul.
I shall insist on having Mrs. Hall's letter read at the meeting.
Oh, you won't have to insist, Doctor. There's a man who can hardly wait to read it. He's rehearsing already. With gestures. Gestures like cutting a throat.
Yeah, I know the man you mean, Mr. Merriweather. My jugular vein is his favorite target.
He's a little more determined than usual this time.
Oh, why?
Well, nepotism raises its curly little head here, Doctor. You see, Mrs. Garnet's maiden name was Wellman. She's his sister. And what do you say to that?
Oh, brother.
Very serious meeting of the Board of Governors is drawing to a close. Dr. Hall has been harried and beset for 2 long hours with the sniping of Mr. Wellman and the snobbery of Mrs. Garnet. The president of Ivy is speaking.
And in conclusion, Mrs. Garnet and gentlemen, may I say this? Having heard Mrs. Hall's letter and forgetting for the moment that she's my wife, I think we're fortunate indeed to have such warmth, such understanding, quite by accident, on this campus. If my recognition of her virtues could be called an accident. Remembering again that she is my wife, my pride in her knows no bounds. Mrs. Garnet and members of the board, a college such as Ivy is made up of more than bricks, mortar, and books. There are elements even more important than what we call learning. It is our tradition to furnish proper equipment for life. And whether we do it with textbooks, songs, good talk, or simple understanding of our fellows, doesn't matter. Mrs. Hall has been an invaluable contributor. Victoria.
Oh, Toddy. Was it awful for you?
It was magnificent for me. Thank you, my darling, for giving me the opportunity to say out loud so many things that, had they stayed inside me any longer, would have turned into cute little ulcers.
Well, what's going to happen?
I have invited Mrs. Garnet to tea with her brother.
Oh, no. What kind of tea shall we serve? Hemlock?
I don't look forward to it either, my dear. But I thought it highly unfair that you shouldn't get a crack at her, too. As long as she's here.
Well, I could have lived without it.
Oh, I know. But one can't let a person go about the world accusing other persons of one thing or another. Just because one knows only one class of person. I mean, can one?
Would you mind repeating the question?
Yes, darling, I would. But we'll give Mrs. Garnet an abridged 4-year course in world understanding over one cup of tea. Lots of sugar.
All right, Toddy. I'll do the very best I can.
Oh, you don't have to do anything. Did anyone call while I was out?
Yes, and strangely enough, Betty Garnet. She asked if she could see me this afternoon, and not knowing of these plans of yours, I said yes.
Well, let her come. It'll be a nice surprise for her.
Hey, Colonel.
Oh, yes. Me. What is it, Alice?
The old buzzard's back. Got a vulture with him.
Alice, you simply must control your powers of description. I cannot permit you to talk like this.
Oh, sorry, sir. Mrs. Garnet and Mr. Wellman to see you, sir.
That's better. Less accurate, perhaps, but more courteous. Ask them to come in, will you?
Yes, sir. As you were.
She drives you crazy, darling.
No, she only frightens me. I rather suspect that the whole household has taken on a new color since her arrival. A sort of a lurid khaki. You know, she makes me... Ah, Mrs. Garnet. Mr. Wellman.
Dr. Hall.
Victoria, may I present Mrs. Garnet?
How do you do?
My wife.
How do you do? Good evening, Mr. Wellman.
How do you do, Mrs. Hall?
Mrs. Hall?
Won't you sit down, please?
Well, tea will be in just a moment. I'd better warn you, Mrs. Garnet. Tea may be served four abreast or company front. Our cook is ex-army, ex-whack. But he's the best I could find at the moment.
Really? I presume you do have trouble in keeping your servants.
Well, no, Mrs. Garnet, that isn't the difficulty.
I'm afraid the home of a college president is different from those you'll find around Boston's Back Bay.
That's true. We really do have to be prepared for some quite remarkable eating emergencies. Like, say, 20 hungry students at 6 o'clock on any Sunday night.
What is the emergency about that?
The emergency of each one of them having run out of what is known as his allowance.
I have always found it charming in my own home to serve al fresco.
Well, I'm sure you have, but sometimes it gets a little too al fresco and I find myself cooking for an unexpected dozen or more.
Do you cook?
You bet I do. I make the most wonderful risotto with mussels. Ezio Pinza gave me his own recipe.
Let me say, Mrs. Garnet, that for me, cook's night out is one enchanted evening.
Risotto with mussels? But when could you possibly have learned to cook, Mrs. Hall? What with your years in the theater?
Well, we have to eat, Mrs. Garnet. Yes, even in the theater. There are producers who minimize the necessity, but it's there.
It never occurred to me. Oh, not that you didn't eat, of course. But I've always thought of an actress as, well, late suppers. You know, a cold bottle and a hot bird. The Savoy Grill. That sort of thing.
Well, there's that, too, when you're a success. But it's usually a long time arriving. A hot plate in one's flat helps to bridge the gap.
I remember seeing you in The Gap, Mrs. Hall. Lulu's Mad Moments. Gold is Green, 1934.
Well, that was The Gap, all right. It ran 3 days. And 6 months later, I got my next job. A smaller part, and I didn't like it much either.
Why did you take it?
I was an actress, Mrs. Garnet. That's my job. The profession I'd chosen.
What happened?
That play ran for 2 years.
And at the end of the run, Vicky found herself London's newest star.
How fascinating. How many years had you been working at it by this time?
Well, that bit of information, Mrs. Garnet, will remain forever a secret.
I should imagine. Anyway, from that time on, you were a star.
No, I didn't hit the jackpot until one day at St. Andrews, when I sank a 40-foot putt. Scotch producer, I won the match and the starring part.
Do you play golf, Mrs. Hall?
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I have a full set of clubs, Mr. Wellman.
And a handicap that makes me press like a tailor.
Well, I must say, Mrs. Hall, I'm amazed. Cooking, golf? Really, I had no idea.
Mrs. Garnet, may I ask you a very direct question?
Of course, Doctor.
Have you ever known an actress before?
Good heavens, no. Well, I do not. I'm terribly sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. I do understand so well. Is it, shocking to find out that an actress can be, well, something approaching normal?
Well, frankly, Mrs. Hall, it is. And a shock that may be very good for me. Tell me a little more. I'm beginning to think I'm a pretty stupid woman. And I know about my brother.
In that case, I have a feeling we could be very good friends.
You know, Mrs. Hall...
Call me Vicky.
You know, Vicky? My name's Grace, by the way.
I'm going to tell you that I only hope the influence Elizabeth has had at home is half as good as she's had here.
Great.
And you, Clarence, why don't you mind your own business? Now, Vicky, tell me.
Mrs. Garnett, I feel...
What about that risotto?
This, this muffin.
I'd be delighted to give you the recipe. There are several ways of doing it.
Victoria.
Really? Oh, go on, Vicky. Go on.
Have you ever tried to get into a conversation when two women who have suddenly discovered each other are talking? It's impossible. Do you know that for the first time since we had known each other, Mr. Wellman and I sat in complete silence, looking at each other in almost a friendly way. Tea came and went, and the long shadows began to deepen over the lawn in front of the house before we could get in another word.
A wonderful recipe, Vicky. I'm going to try it as soon as I get home.
Oh, good. Pardon me.
Yes,
Paul. There's a Miss Betty Garner to see you, ma'am.
Oh, Elizabeth. She doesn't even know I'm in town.
Well, ask her to come in, Alice.
She said, ma'am, for you to come to the living room window. She's got a surprise for you. There's a lot of personnel with her.
Just tell the girl her mother's here.
No, wait a moment, Mr. Wellman. Let's see what she's up to.
Well, why don't you all just sit still for a moment? Betty!
Yes, Mrs. Hall.
Well, what's all that crowd doing with you? Oh, will you stay right where you are?
You look so pretty framed in the window like that.
Thank you.
You know, we didn't do much after the junior follies were over, but we thought about it a lot. Mostly about you, because the follies was you. You had the patience of a saint. You never stopped working with us, and you beat our brains out in the nicest way anybody could. And you gave us the best follies in the history of Ivy. You know something? We love you. And we want to tell you so in the best way we know.
We can sing better than we can talk, anyway.
It isn't tied with ribbons or wrapped in cellophane. The gift we bring is gratitude expressed in this refrain.
Oh, we love. That surround us here today, and we will not forget, though we depart far away to the heaven on the high.
Thank you, boys. Thank you.
Mr. Wellman?
Yes, Dr. Hall.
Any questions?
Here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colvin.
Oh, Toddy, I do hate moving day, don't you?
Despise it. Except that in this case, there are no brawny moving men peering into the old refrigerator in hopes of finding an overlooked bottle of something or other.
Are you all packed here?
All packed. I say, Vicky, do you suppose our friends will be able to find us again after we move?
Well, it'd be dreadful if they couldn't. Better make it very explicit, William.
Very well. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, beginning May the 10th, the Halls of Ivy will move to Wednesday night over the same NBC station. Your local paper will give you the exact time.
We hope you'll join us next Wednesday night. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Be sure to see Ronald Coleman's latest picture, Champagne for Caesar. Remember, beginning next week, The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman, will be heard on Wednesday.
The Halls of Ivy, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 5th of May, 1950, on NBC. You may have noticed the theme song of the program sung in its entirety toward the tail end of the broadcast, and the reason for that was the composition penned by Vic Knight and Henry Russell was probably the most popular part of the radio show. The next song that in a way made its debut on the Halls of Ivy, called Drink, 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 was heard on May 17, 1950, just a couple of weeks after the broadcast we just heard.
Gentlemen, glasses up!
Drink, drink, drink to the fields of golden grain. Drink, drink, drink to the gentle April rain. Drink.
Not too much longer after that song was heard on the Halls of Ivy that it and the theme of the program were paired and released as a 45 record. This is an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Time now for The Great Gildersleeve, with an episode from the 20th of May, 1945, on NBC.
The Great Gildersleeve!
Yeah.
What's happening to the great Gildersleeve? We find him opening his morning mail, and among the circulars from plumbers, investment houses, and people who want to sell him a used car is a letter postmarked Wistful Vista.
Well, Wistful Vista.
Is it from Fibber McGee, Uncle Mort?
I suppose so, Leroy. Wonder what the little squirt wants now.
Is it from Mr. McGee?
No. Listen to this, children.
Who's it from?
The First National Bank of Wistful Vista.
Uh-oh.
You're wrong, Leroy. Listen. Dear Mr. Gildersleeve, upon checking over our records, we find you have an unclaimed savings account with us, which we have taken the liberty of transferring to your bank in Summerfield. The amount, with interest to date, is $209.14.
We're rich! Yay!
I can't believe it.
What's going on in here?
We're rich, Bertie.
Uncle Mort found some money.
My, this family gets crazier every day.
Stop it, stop it. Now, we're not rich, Bertie. We never will be.
You don't have to tell me, Mr. Gildersleeve. I gave up long ago.
But apparently I have come into a little money.
Where are you going, huh?
I'm going to call Mr. Todd at the bank. I'm going to ask him if the money's come in. This might be McGee's idea of a joke, you know.
Some joke?
No worse than some of the... Oh, hello, Mr. Todd there. Mr. Gildersleeve. But if it is a gag, I'll take that little twerp McGee and squeeze $219.14 right out of his ears. Hello, Mr. Todd. I want to find out if you received a deposit from my account this morning from... You did? That's right, $209.14. Thank you. Stop it, you'll shake down the house.
What are you going to buy with all that money, Unc?
Well, I'm going to think it over. And in order to think, I need to be alone. And to be alone, I need a cigar. See you later, children.
Oh, well, that isn't fair. Yeah.
Well, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. What can I do for you this morning?
I'll tell you, Peavy. Give me 1,050-cent cigars.
What's that? Oh. Shall I put them in a bag, or will you just smoke them here?
Only joking, Peavy.
So is I. Yeah.
But it just so happens I could almost buy 1,000 cigars today. Had a little windfall this morning. Savings account I'd forgotten all about.
You don't say.
Yep.
I've never been able to forget a penny. Must be a wonderful feeling.
Great. But I'm not blowing at all on cigars, Peavy. Let me have three of those three for a half.
Yes, sir. That'll be 62 cents.
62 cents for 50 cents worth of cigars. That's inflation, Peavy.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. It's all taxes.
Oh, well, so long as I'm rich.
I wonder if you considered investing this windfall, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Investing it? Well, I hadn't thought of that, but it might be a good idea.
Well, you could spend it, only most of the stuff you buy these days is junk. But after the war...
You're right. They're going to be reconverting pretty soon.
No, I wouldn't say that. The war isn't over.
Well, it's all over in Europe. If I take this money and put it into some company with good reconversion program, maybe I can get in on the ground floor or something nice and solid. Television, maybe.
Well, I wasn't thinking...
Air conditioning, maybe, Peavy. Or aviation. Everybody's going to own helicopters after the war.
I was thinking of something a lot solider than helicopters, Mr. Gildersleeve.
What was that?
I was thinking of war bonds. Care to buy one?
Oh. Well,
I'm sorry to bring this up, Mr. Gildersleeve, but I have a quota, and I thought that since you'd committed some money...
Well,
maybe...
Peavy, war bonds are a fine investment. Fine investment. Every citizen owes it to his country to invest in war bonds. It helps finance the war. It helps control inflation.
That's what I see.
Yes, sir. Put me down for a $25 bond.
That'll be $18.75.
Yes, sir. Glad to do my bit, Peavy. At the same time, a man's got to think of his future. So I'll just look around for some industrial investments, too. Reconversion is important, Peavy. They need capital.
Who?
Oh, various manufacturers. I'll find somebody that needs money. Don't worry.
I don't doubt you can do that.
Say, what am I worrying about? I got a financier right in my front yard. I'll bet Rumson Bullard knows plenty about investments.
What makes you think so?
Because he's retired. A fellow that retires has to have his money invested, and he has to watch it like a hawk, Peavy. If he loses it, he's got to go back to work.
Dear me.
Yes, sir. Should have thought of that in the first place. I'll go see Rumson Bullard right away.
What about the bond, Mr. Gildersleeve?
I'll pay you later.
Don't pay any attention to Leroy, Uncle Mort. I thought of something really practical.
Now, I'm not going to buy anything, so just save your breath.
Oh, Unc, I only want an electric saw. It only costs $16.50.
But we really need a sofa, Uncle Mort. I'm absolutely ashamed of ours every time Marshall Bullard comes over.
I didn't come home to argue with you children, and I'm not going to spend the money on fripperies. I'm going to invest it. Will you get out of my way, please, Leroy?
Me?
I'd like to go upstairs and put on a clean shirt, if you'll permit me.
For corn's sake, you just got dressed.
Well, I'm going over and see Mr. Bullard for a minute, and I thought...
Uncle Mort, the furniture in this house is awful. The couch isn't fit to sit on alone, even.
The discussion is closed, Marjorie.
Well, I don't see why you should change your shirt just to go to see Mr. Bullard. You ought to see what he's got on.
I'm not changing it for him, Leroy. I just didn't notice when I dressed this morning how worn this shirt was. What's Bullard got on?
An old pair of pants like the ones you gave the clothing drive. And a dirty old sweater.
Is he doing some work in the yard?
No, he's just knocking a golf ball around out behind his house.
Golf ball? Well, that ought to be easy. I guess I won't change my clothes after all. Well, Mr. Bullard, another addict of the grand old game, I see.
What? Oh, hello, Gildersleeve. You play golf?
Do I play golf? I'm afraid I'll have to plead guilty. Nice putting stance you've got.
Ernie Trafton taught it to me. He's the pro of the Stony Meadows Club out on Long Island.
Oh, yes, I've heard of him. Is that where you played back east?
Mostly. That was my home club. Most of my friends played there.
A lot of Wall Streeters, I presume.
Wall Streeters?
Well, I imagine most of your friends were big stock market operators, weren't they?
Oh, no. Just ordinary businessmen. Want to try a couple of putts?
Oh, thanks. I guess you've played the market in your time, haven't you, Mr. Bullard?
Well, I fooled with it a little, but it's bad medicine. Go on, hit the ball. The hole is that tin right over there.
Well, that's pretty clever, that little tin. Oh, yes, sir. But as I was saying, I'm thinking of reinvesting some of my investments. some of my funds, Mr. Bullard, and I just thought that maybe as an old market manipulator, you might know a little inside information you'd be willing to pass along to a neighbor.
Well, I'll give you a tip.
I'm listening, Mr. Bullard.
Put your money in war bonds. And if you're not going to hit the ball, give me back my putter.
I might as well putt.
Not bad. Wait, I'll drop another ball and see if I can beat you. There. Now.
We're about even. No, I think you're a little better. You were with United Refrigeration, weren't you, Mr. Bullard?
With them for 20 years, yes.
I was wondering, what would you think of United Refrigeration as an investment?
Gildersleeve, take my advice and stay out of the market. It's no place for amateurs, as I found out myself.
You'll never convince me you're an amateur, Mr. Bullard.
I'm not even that now. I'm out of it. Well, that is practically out of it.
I knew it. You've still got an interest in the company, haven't you?
Well, naturally.
Tell me, they'll be reconverting one of these days, won't they?
Of course they will. Well, that is, I suppose they will. I haven't any inside information.
Oh, no? Thanks very much, Mr. Bullard.
But what...
A word to the wise is sufficient. But don't worry, I won't tell anybody else. These millionaires are all alike. Cagey, trying to pretend he wasn't in the market. Just afraid some more smart people would get in there, too. Make it tough for him. But he certainly gave himself away. Yes, sir? Just grabbed myself a few shares of that United...
Leroy! Confound that kid. I don't know how many times I've told him not to leave that bicycle on the
side. Call me, Uncle.
Get this bicycle off the walk. It almost broke my neck just now.
Can I leave that there? Sorry, Uncle.
I'm tired of hearing you say that, Leroy.
Well, there goes my electric saw. Darn the luck. Why did he have to trip over it? Gosh, if I found $200 practically lying in the street, I'd buy stuff for everybody. Expensive stuff, too. I'd buy everything I saw in Hogan's department store window.
I won't be able to get all this furniture immediately, but if certain plans work out...
Oh, Uncle darling. Furniture.
Now, now, my dear, there's nothing certain yet. Of course, it isn't certain the sun will rise tomorrow, either.
How soon will you know?
Won't take very long, if my calculations are correct. There might be a waffle iron for you, too, Bertie.
Mr. Gildersleeve, if you buy me a waffle iron, I promise you won't regret it.
Yeah, I know that, Bertie.
Waffle iron.
And if everything goes well, I might even get Leroy that electric saw. But don't tell him I said so.
Hee-hee, the old son of a gun. Well, I'll play along with him.
Gildersleeve the Financier. For 3 days, he's been following the ups and downs of the stock market, and he's been like a kid on a roller coaster.
Gee.
Fortunately, there have been more ups than downs. Today, the 50 shares of United Refrigeration, which he bought at 4.25, have skyrocketed to 7.
7.5.
7.5. Now, when Gildersleeve gets hold of a good thing, he's not a man to keep it to himself. So when he sees his next-door neighbor, Mrs. Ransom, going by, he runs to the window and hollers.
Leela! Leela, where are you going?
Oh, hello, Throckmorton.
Wait a minute. I'll be right out. Wait up, Leela. What's your hurry?
I'm on my way to the lending library. Miss Trimble just phoned me. I'm next on the list for Forever Amber.
Well, forget it, Leela. Come on up on the porch and sit down.
Oh, I can't.
Oh, come on.
I can't. I've been waiting 2 months for this book. I'll save it for you when I've finished, if you like.
Oh, I'm too busy to do any reading these days.
Well, if you're so busy, what are you doing home in the middle of the afternoon? Why aren't you down at the water department?
I'm letting my secretary handle that. I have more important things to attend to. Come on. Sit down for a minute, Leela.
You're being very mysterious, Throckmorton.
Well, I don't tell everything I know. But you'd better be nice to me just the same.
Now, why should I be nice to you? What have you ever done to deserve it?
Nothing. I just thought you might like to know that I came into a little money recently, that's all.
Let's sit right down here on the grass, shall we? Throckmorton, stop it.
Why should I?
Oh, please, there's a little boy coming.
Oh, him. Hello, Craig.
Where's Leroy? I want him to play with me.
Leroy? He's in the house somewhere, I guess. Why don't you go ring the bell?
Who's she?
Well, this is Mrs. Ransom. She lives next door, Craig. Leela, this is Craig Bullard.
Oh, how do you do, Craig? My, you're a fine big boy, aren't you?
Where's Mr. Ransom?
Mr. Ransom is no longer with us. Now, if you want Leroy, just go ring the bell.
I want him to come out. I want him to play with me.
Well, just go ring the bell and he'll come out.
What are you doing?
We're sitting on the grass.
What does it look like we're doing?
I want Leroy to come out and play with me.
All right, go get him. We're busy here. Gee, God.
Just go right up to the doll, honey. Don't be afraid.
Leroy! Oh, Leroy! Leroy isn't here!
He's there, all right, Craig. Just walk in. Now, where were we? Oh, yes.
Throckmorton. You were telling me about some money or something.
You stick with me, Leela, and you'll wear diamonds.
I couldn't possibly accept a diamond from a man I'm not even engaged to.
Well, I didn't mean that literally.
Oh.
But I can tell you how to make some money, Leela, if you'd like to.
Would I? How?
Promise you'll be nice to me?
We'll see.
Well, come here.
What for?
I want to whisper in your ear.
Whisper what?
A secret.
What's the secret?
United Refrigeration.
What?
United Refrigeration, Leela. It's a stock. I bought 50 shares at 4.25 3 days ago, and already it's up to 7.5.
Is that good?
Good? If it keeps on at that rate, Leela, I figure in 4 months, it'll reach 132. That's where I sell. And make a tidy little profit.
I think it's so exciting. I've always been dying to make some money in the stock market, but my husband, Beauregard, he was always so conservative. All he left me was some little old municipal bonds. You know what I'm going to do. I'm going to sell them and buy what you've got.
And you know what I'm going to do, Leela? I'm going to collect a little broker's fee right now.
Throckmorton, let go. Let go, silly. Here comes Judge Hooker.
Oh?
Well... A little gambling on the green, huh?
You mind your own business, Horace.
Oh, Horace, I'm so glad you're here. After all, you're my attorney.
Do you need one?
Well, I suppose I ought to consult you as long as you're here. Hey, you know those little old municipal bonds that Beauregard left me?
Sound as a rock of Gibraltar, Leela. Not a thing to worry about.
Yes. Well, I've decided to sell them.
What?
I'm going to sell them and buy some stocks, the kind that Throckmorton has.
Leela, are you crazy?
Now, just a minute.
Gildersleeve knows absolutely nothing about the stock market.
Listen, people go around making such a mystery out of the stock market. It's as simple as ABC, Judge. Just buy when it's low and sell when it's high. That's all.
Huh. How do you know when a stock's going to go up? How do you know that it won't go down?
Never mind how I know. I know, that's all. I bought 50 shares 3 days ago at 4.25, and already it's up to 7.5.
What did you say was the name of the stock?
Ha! I'm not telling. But if Leela here wants to buy some...
Uncle Mort!
Yes, my dear?
Your secretary's calling from the office.
Tell her I'm in conference. Tell her I can't be disturbed. I'll call her back. And Marjorie?
Yes?
Do me a favor. Call up Mr. Todd at the bank again and ask him the latest quotation on United Refrigeration.
Ask him what?
Just ask him how my stock is doing. He'll understand. I've been in touch with him all day.
The market's closed by now.
Oh, ask him what time the market opens in the morning.
Now, Leela, my advice to you is let the stock market strictly alone.
Leela is taking her advice from me, Judge.
Well, come to think of it, Horace may be right, Throckmorton. Down home, everybody said poor old Colonel DeLacy never would have shot himself if it hadn't been for the market. And, of course, they're all as poor as church mice now, the DeLacys.
Why, I know of a case right here in town. Man bought stocks on margin, got caught short, wound up committing forgery. In the pen right now. His family's on relief. I hope you haven't bought this stock on margin, Gildy.
What did he say, Marjorie? Did you get him? What did he say?
He said the stock is at 9.
9? Hee-hee! That's up a point and a half. What did I tell you?
And the market opens at 5.
5 o'clock in the morning? That's impossible. It opens at 9.
Oh,
Oh, that's right. It's the market that opens at 9. He said the stock has dropped to 5.
5? What do you think, Judge? Do you think I ought to sell?
There's not a thing you can do till tomorrow, Gildy. My advice to you is to sleep on it.
Sleep on it? How am I going to sleep on a thing like that? I won't sleep a wink, Judge.
Now, Gildy, I wouldn't worry. I have a very simple rule that I follow in these cases.
Oh? What's that?
Buy when it's low and sell when it's high.
Oh, go on and laugh, you old goat. One. Two. Three. 4 o'clock. I'll never get to sleep. Why did I do it?
7.5. 7.25. 7. 6.75. 6.5. 6.25.
Buy when it's low and sell when it's high.
Oh, shut up.
6. 5.75. 5.5.
Oh, no.
5.25. 5. 4.5.
What happened to 4.75?
4.25. 4. More margin, please.
But I can't.
More margin.
Well, give me time. Give me time. Peavy, I've tried everybody in this town. At least you're my friend. You'll lend me some money, won't you, Peavy?
Wouldn't say that.
Mr. Todd, please. You've got me with my back to the wall. If you say no, I'm ruined.
No.
But this bank... I'm an old depositor here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. We're not in business for our health.
Then think of my children. My little nephew, Leroy.
Oh, will you read? I get your papers here. Please, mister, buy a paper. Please, I'm hungry.
And my little niece, Marjorie.
In the name of sweet charity, anything at all. A crust of bread, even. Not for myself, but for my poor old uncle. He can't even go out of the house. He hasn't any shoes.
Bless her heart. And then there's good old Bertie.
Nobody knows the trouble I see.
How about it, Mr. Todd? Are you going to let these children starve? Are you going to let them sell Bertie down the river?
Sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. We'll have to close you out.
What's it for?
Uncle Mort and Leroy, what's happened?
Oh, it's all right. Unc just fell out of bed.
What time is it?
About 8:30.
8:30. The market opens at 9. Get out of here. I've got to get some clothes on. I've got to get over and see Bullard.
Someone at the door, Craig?
A man.
Yep.
Oh, hello there, Gildersleeve.
I don't know if you heard, but United Refrigeration's dropped 2 points.
Well?
Well, I thought you'd want to know. I mean, we got to do something. I mean, you've got influence. If you threw your support behind it when the market opens...
What business is it of mine?
Well, you own stock in it, don't you?
United Refrigeration? I told you I got rid of all of that 2 years ago. As a matter of fact, I got rid of all my stock 2 years ago.
But I thought...
Yes, sir. I sold out all my holdings and I put in every nickel I had into government securities.
Government securities?
War bonds. And between you and me, I've never regretted it. No blood pressure when the market drops. No more indigestion. And I can sleep like a baby at night.
Well, that's more than I can say.
After all, I don't know where you're going to find a smarter investment, but then I don't need to tell you.
Oh, no. No, indeed. Not us smart fellows. Well, thanks for the tip, Mr. Bullard.
Look out there. Oh, I told Craig not to leave that there.
Everywhere I go, bicycles. Mr. Todd.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, feeling bullish this morning?
I'm feeling terrible. I want to sell out. I want to dump all my holdings.
You're sure you've considered this?
All night long.
Well, after all, you've only held the stock for 3 days.
You don't have to run a horse all season to know when it's a dog.
Oh, Miss Honrath.
What's the latest quotation on United Refrigeration?
United Refrigeration opened at 4.25.
That's just what I paid for it.
Well, now, it might go up.
It might go down. Sell it before I go crazy.
Sell 50 shares for Mr. Gildersleeve's account.
Now, might I ask you, Mr. Gildersleeve, if you're contemplating some other investment?
You darn right I am. War bonds.
A very wise choice. There's no sounder investment. How much shall I put you down for?
Oh, no, you don't. I'm buying these from a place I can trust.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, war bonds are war bonds, no matter where you buy them.
Well, I'm not taking any chances. I'm buying mine at the drugstore. And not only that, Peavy, it's your patriotic duty.
That's what I'm saying.
This war isn't over yet. No, sir. We still got the Japs to beat.
That's what I'm saying.
You hear all this talk about post-war conversion. I bet you don't hear any of that on Okinawa.
That's what I'm saying.
Any man who doesn't put every cent he's got into war bonds, he's not only unpatriotic, but he's a darn fool. Because war bonds are the best investment in this world, bar none. So don't let anybody come in here and tell you you ought to ease off on the war bonds and put your money into something else. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Well?
That's what I'm saying.
Very well. And if I ever do it again, Peavy, I hope you'll give me a good swift kick in the shins.
Well, no, I wouldn't do that.
I mean it, Peavy. Well, goodbye, Peavy.
Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve. The bonds will be mailed to you. And thanks for the order.
Not at all, Peavy. Thank you.
The great Gildersleeve. Good name for him. What a character. Well, it takes all kinds, doesn't it? That's what I'm saying.
I heard that, Peavy. Good night, everybody.
The Great Gildersleeve on Tuned to Yesterday from May 20th, 1945 on NBC. And that closes this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.